This is a Jerry Pippin investigative special. MUFON, after 40 years, under siege. Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin. A series of shows this week on MUFON, that's a mutual UFO network, and basically it's the world's largest reporting network for UFO investigations, and their charter includes the word scientific investigations. There seems to be lots of troubles. Lots of state directors have been replaced. Some different things have been put into force as far as policies, and they at one time were working with an outside group on a fast-track investigation of UFOs. Come to find out, maybe they're still doing something along that line. And we thought we would try to investigate and find out what's happening exactly as MUFON's getting ready to have their 2011 symposium later this month, the last 3 days of the month, as a matter of fact, in Irvine, California, at the Hyatt Regency. If you're in the area, or if you'd like to attend someplace and find out about UFOs, and at the same time maybe see some fireworks, then perhaps this is a place to go. I talked to Elaine Douglas today, who is with the committee to reform MUFON, and they will have a hospitality suite on Saturday night at the convention, at the hotel, at the Hyatt Regency. And they are inviting everyone to come by and talk to them about the actions and the direction of MUFON. We'll be following up on that as well. Basically, what they want, more than anything else, is for the board of directors to be responsive to the membership. We are going to deal tonight with something that's been eating at me for some time. And that was an interview I did with Chase Klotsky. She, at the time, was the head of the STAR Team Investigative Unit. Within a week or two after I did the show, she was gone. She left. She resigned. Now she's a member of a competing organization, and Chase has consented to come on and tell us all about why she left and her disenchantment with MUFON. Chase, it's always good to have you on the show. Welcome again.
Hey, Jerry. I do enjoy coming on and speaking with you.
Well, I mean, after all, Chase, you've become one of us. By that, I mean you now have your own radio show. You've changed organizations. I think the job's pretty much the same, but...
Yeah, basically. That happened pretty quickly, too.
First off, let's talk about the radio show. It's on Inception Radio every Wednesday night.
Well, I am a co-host with Michael Rambacher, and we're on the same network, as you know, Jerry, Inception Radio Network. And our show is called Project White Paper, and we are a UFO paranormal show. We just kind of laid back format. We do a lot of live shows. I most recently was down in the swamps of Louisiana hunting the Honey Island Monster, and Michael was at the Rolling Hills Asylum in New York chasing ghosts. So we often do live location shows as well. It's just fun.
Now, I was right. It's Wednesday nights on Inception Radio.
Yes, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Well, you've been doing this now for a couple, 3 months.
Yeah, it's gone by fast. It's so much fun. I guess I didn't realize it was that long.
Now, besides the radio show, you're no longer with MUFON, and we hope you tell all later in the show about why you left. And you're with a different organization now, a new organization. Tell us about that.
Well, my job is Director of Investigations, and I am with EPIC, which stands for Extraordinary Phenomenon Investigations Council. And basically, we're a group of professionals. I think we're the second largest UFO group of investigators and the largest anomaly. I kind of say we investigate everything because if your family's being affected or, you know, you have physical evidence or you know, just a report that you would like us to come and check out. We do have investigators and scientific staff that are ready to go, and we work as a team. Right now, we're a little over 400 members, if I remember correctly. So
this group is growing fast.
We're growing fast, but at the same time, we're not set up like other organizations, so the way we get our cases is much different.
Well, Chase, tell us a little bit about that.
It's mostly because we do everything. We do paranormal investigations. We do cryptozoology. We UFOs. Because we have the staff that are professionals in these areas and that have a lot of experience. And quite frankly, most in all of these communities know there's a connection somewhere. How many times in reports of Bigfoot or Sasquatch do we get, you know, strange lights? So now you have a UFO component or, you know, UFOs or maybe alien reports of alien contact. How many times as they get going, you realize that's probably more poltergeist activity or, so we know they're more connected. So to have a broader perspective is what we're doing. And you kind of have to do it all, I think, personally. You can't, we didn't want to be closed into this little box.
Well, now a lot of people are beginning to come around to the idea that maybe all this is interrelated. All of this, the paranormal and UFOs, and I think you're one of those people.
Absolutely, and we actually had Nick Redfern on, who is a fabulous, fabulous investigator, and he does it all as well and has a lot of research as well as many New York Times bestselling books. But, you know, I came right out and asked him on our show if, you know, he believed that they were all connected, and he not only validated that, but you know, was kind of, you're missing a big picture if you don't, and if you're not involved with that. So we were pretty excited that we were on the right page. We kind of knew we were, but it's always nice to hear peers and other people that you respect and work with have that same opinion and mindset.
Chase, it sounds like you're pretty happy. I mean, you're happy with what you're doing now and where you're going in with your life?
Yeah, I'm very, very happy. I love working with my boss, Ken Cherry. He's awesome. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't want to like this guy. And when he first approached me about Epic, I took my time. I didn't jump right in. I took my time for a lot of reasons. And it's absolutely a solid, solid organization. And give us a year, Jerry, and we're going to be at that Super Bowl. I promise you. We will be at that Super Bowl in a year.
Well, I've never met Ken Cherry, and I've heard all kinds of things, as we all have, but I'll take your word for it. Now, what's your title with his organization again?
I'm the Director of Investigations. I don't even really use that title too much. It sounds too formal. I call myself Ken's number two. That's what I have. I'm Ken's number two. And but I, you know, I'm more of a partner. So, you know, all the investigators, you know, when we're getting these great cases, and all of our investigators are packed out and full right now. I mean, we're just busy in so many different areas and some really big events. And, you know, I'm just there to support them, you know, help answer questions, get them what they need. Our investigators are very well packed with sophisticated equipment. We're just good to go. So I'm more of a direction, not a boss. You know, we're a team, and that's how we behave.
Chase, you mentioned Ken Cherry earlier, and I've never met him. Can you flesh that out a little bit more about your relationship with him?
I not only like him personally, I highly respect him and what he's doing and his vision, or I wouldn't have joined him. You know, I was a little jaded when I was offered a position with him, and so I took my time and like I said, the best way to put it is I didn't want to like the guy, and now I adore working for him and completely respect him and know where his vision is. He knows exactly where we're going to be and how to get there in a year, and that's important, is that foresight.
Now, Chase, when we did our last interview, you were very pro-MUFON. And then within a very short time, you were gone.
Yeah, it did. It happened very quick.
Can you explain that a little bit to me? Exactly what happened? why you had a change of heart?
Well, sure. You know, I don't think anybody doubts. I've done many interviews and talked to hundreds of people, you know, as a deputy director in MUFON and the star team manager, and I don't think anybody could not tell I loved my job. I loved being the star team manager. I was completely loving MUFON. I was loyal. All of that was coming down. It was exactly how I felt, very dedicated. They had every part of me that was good. I was just loved being the star team manager. To me, it was the best job in MUFON. And we got to work the most intricate, difficult cases, complicated. I got to work with the best of the best. You had to have experience. Just loved it. And but when I accepted this position as the star team manager, you know, I was told how it was going to run, what the ambitions for the program were, what the intentions were, and I was completely on board. And when Chuck Reaver was the director of investigations, and he was the one I worked with, had offered me the position, he and I worked very closely together.
Now, for our listeners and me, Chuck is a member of the board of directors?
Yes, he is.
And still is.
But I knew him as, you know, the director of investigations and my boss. And he was so sophisticated to work for, and he's just a class act, and I loved him. He was so helpful, you know, answering questions, giving me insight, because the most important thing to remember is nobody knew me. I was kind of new on the scene, not as an investigator, but as an active member, because I've been a member with MUFON since 1996. Loved MUFON, couldn't wait for an opportunity, you know, to be able to work very actively with them. So you can imagine, you know, never holding a state position, never, you know, just kind of going from journal subscriber to certified field investigator to star team manager. I was thrilled. And the first thing I had to do was write the program. Well, I can remember when Chuck Reaver told me that, I kind of thought, geez, don't you guys have people for that? But I did it. I wrote the program. He and I had him on speed dial. He answered so many questions for me. My background is as a master trainer, master instructor, and, you know, preparing active duty forces for specialty schools, special operation programs, and deployment. I can do this. I was very confident I could do it. And I think we actually kind of pulled it off.
Chase, I'm still puzzled. I mean, when we did that interview, you were just really, as they say in the South, ginger peachy with MUFON. And then all of a sudden, bam, you were gone.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you were proud of the job you were doing. You were proud of MUFON.
Yeah, we really did. We got a lot of praise and attention from the international director, the board of directors, really not only for the program design, but that it was conclusive. It was a good, conclusive, solid program. And it was also stated to me that John Schuessler was impressed by the language of the program, which I took as such a compliment, you know, and I was just thrilled. And just the program just sailed right through and was ready to go. We had, you know, some issues when we first got it started because the state directors were very suspicious with the program, due to, you know, what happened before with the Bigelow and the SIP program. I had nothing to do with that. I never talked to Bigelow. We had no outside influences whatsoever. I literally wrote that program at my dining room table. But, you know, to get the program off the ground, I made a lot of promises to state directors. I knew I had to stay above board. I made promises. The state directors really are the lifeline in MUFON.
What kind of promises?
Basically that, you know, we would keep these, you know, cases up front. We would keep them honest. We weren't going to steal cases off the CMS and take them for ourselves. We would not enter states without the state directors knowing we're there, and that the star team was not going to override their staff and their volunteers. You know, just some of the problems, you know, that some of the people and volunteers had experienced from the last program.
Let's explain Bigelow to people who may not know about it. Bigelow Aerospace, I guess, out of Las Vegas, building a private spacecraft, as a matter of fact. And he became interested in getting the data from the research at MUFON. And I guess he hurt a few people's feelings simply because he showed up, demanded, not him himself, but his investigators, demanded confidentiality. Is that about right?
Investigate. They would go into states and investigate, and the state director would not know that there were MUFON teams conducting investigations in their state. We've all heard about the bribes, you know, that investigators were offered to sell information to Bigelow. We've all heard about...
Bribery. You got to tell me more about that. Do you have some first-hand experience with being bribed?
I do not. I received an email with... you know, there's still plenty of members in MUFON that are aware of this and saw it firsthand. This was relayed back to me. I was not a STAR team member with in the SIP program. I never met Bigelow. I've never talked to Bigelow. I don't really know anything about him other than what I've heard through MUFON.
Let's get back to the disenchantment with MUFON.
Well, because what I was told that this program was just going to be a rapid response unit handling these complicated cases. And, you know, I was excited to do that. Like I said, we had a solid, solid program. And the case in Florida was the first sign of absolute success. Absolute success. We had that.
Now, this is the case we've talked about before, about somebody... I set fire to the backyard and burned up the trace evidence of a landing?
Yes, and every single STAR team case has been compromised. There wasn't a single STAR team case that I organized or conducted that was not compromised.
Now, when you say compromised, you mean somebody finds out that shouldn't know or what?
It would depend. It would depend. You know, we even had a training in Texas. And the state director in Texas called me and said, our witness just got a phone call from somebody asking them not to speak to us and let them come in instead. That's how quick even our STAR team exercise was.
Wow. Can you tell me the name of the person that called and wanted to get the information? Not necessarily the name, maybe even just the organization?
They did not identify themselves. But that the state director of Texas would have more information on that. But,
okay.
You know, we just, from the very first thing we ever tried, we were never not compromised. Okay, well, I'm just trying to do my job and, you know, move forward and try to make these things happen. I was bound and determined we were going to get evidence for MUFON. We were going to, you know, really nail this. And Florida was it. We did not have any. CMS, you know, the dispatchers from the old program and, you know, people that sat by the special 800 numbers or whatever. Let me tell you, myself and the CMS administrator, Sandy Gonzalez, were the ones who determined STAR team cases when we deployed. And you know what we worked off of? The last 20, just like everyone else. We had no special access. We had... you know, nothing new. But we got so good at it, Jerry, that we literally had that case in Florida identified, state director called, and investigator, STAR team investigator assigned, seriously, within 17 minutes of that report hitting CMS. And we continued that track record ever since that case. We were still compromised on that case, but we got there first. We got our evidence. Our evidence reached its destination. There was a chemist, a very highly respected chemist that, you know, everything worked. That was a solid case. I do credit the amazing investigators, though, and that would be Mary Margaret Zimmer and Morgan Bell. They're the ones who pulled this off. They were amazing. they were the epitome of what STAR Team investigators should be, which is equipped, able to deploy within 24 hours, and solid, solid investigators. Those two nailed this case. It was amazing. We were still compromised, but we got there first. Gary, that was the first time we were so excited. We felt like we beat whoever, you know? We were like, yes, we're doing this. And that was the first time I started experiencing trouble for MUFON.
What kind of trouble?
Well, I don't think we were supposed to be that good. I don't think we were...
You mean somebody actually said that to you, or that's just what you figured they meant?
I can't even explain it other than, you know, the thing started coming around, you know, I guess as we're investigating why our cases were being compromised and where it would come from, we knew it wasn't the field investigators or the state officers. We knew that.
Okay, you're using that word compromise again. You mean people were finding out who should not have known you were investigating these cases? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. And worked off it. Absolutely worked off it. Whether they were there first, they were getting our evidence, they were contacting our witnesses. Yes, people were there.
Well, I mean, somebody knows who these people are. Did you ever ask the witnesses?
No, we never found out exactly. We were suspicious, but never had anything solid. We just didn't. And to tell you the truth, I wasn't so worried about who it was. I wanted to know why we were being compromised. And we paid attention. Obviously, if we're deploying within 20 minutes on cases now, we kind of had the system down. We knew this was coming from a God code. And in MUFON, there are 10 to 16 people who have a password that gives them absolute unfettered access to everything in MUFON. STAR Team Manager is one of them. We knew that it was coming from one of these people. That's where the compromise is coming from. It couldn't have been anywhere else. And I'll get to how this all played out later. But that's important to remember right now. But, you know, there's also, I kind of made an inquiry about the UFO stalker that's on the front of the MUFON site. Because if you go in and, you know, you pass over the little icon, it brings up a little case and you get a short report. But if you hit that click for more detail, GPS coordinates come up and, you know, a whole lot more information about that case. Well, as STAR Team Manager, I was shocked that GPS coordinates were on there. Well, I called the person in his home that was responsible for the website and asked them about this, and I was told that the GPS coordinates were not accurate and they would just plot a random site within the zip code that the witnesses put in. So of course my next question was, then why put them there if they're meaningless? So we're either, you know, putting up something that's only going to distract the public, which MUFON doesn't need that right now, if you know what I mean, or, you know, we're lying to investigators or whatever. I just didn't see the reason if that they were useless and not accurate, take them off. But there was no answer, absolutely no answer. But, of course, I did a little research along with a couple other investigators, and we found that any entry-level investigator could easily find an exact location given the information from the UFO stalker. All you had to do was hit the more info button. But, you know, it appears that...
Okay, I want to understand this, Chase. You were impressed upon the idea that there must be lots of security and nobody's talking about these cases, yet you could go to over to the website and find the information anytime? Anybody could?
If you were good enough to find it, savvy enough to know the information was there, and know how to use it, absolutely you could. Everything was right there. You don't even have to sign on. I mean, you just go to the website, it's right there. You know, you don't have to be a member, you don't have to be anything. And, you know, as it should be, since it's a public organization. So I get this, you know, so I just moved on. I'm more worried about, you know, the cases.
Chase, my point is that MUFON is a public institution, has members, and people can go to that website. The mission is to reveal the truth. So what's wrong with that? I mean, shouldn't the public be entitled to know what's happening?
Right, but I still had to worry how to keep our cases secured because, you know, when people think of confidentiality, they think of you can't say anything. What they don't understand is you have people that will steal the evidence, you know, get there first, contact witnesses, and the witnesses are very offended because they didn't think that they were reporting to the whole world. You know, they wanted somebody from MUFON to come and listen to what they had to say and take a report. You know, so now when they're getting all these other calls, it causes a lot of problems. So, you know, we were really conscientious about trying to fix this. So we'll just kind of put that one aside for just a moment, but I will get back to that. The second thing was, is unfortunately, the time that I got in there, we had a regime change. So Chuck Reaver retired his position as DOI, and we had Marie Malzahn take over. Everything was great at first, but boy, that didn't last long for me personally. There was so much drama. Oh my gosh, drama, drama, drama. Secret agendas, future projects involving Bigelow and money. There was always egos clashing, how do we react to the latest negative comment, blog or forum post. It was exhausting. I'm going to tell you, Jerry, it was exhausting. How many times, you know, have their forum been yanked off their own website?
Now, Chase, every time I talk to somebody about their troubles, their problems with MUFON, this woman's name comes up, the one you just named. What's the deal, you think?
Well, I am actually going to get to that. It won't make sense why I left until I give you the kind of the four reasons why I left.
Okay, then this would be a good time to take a break. And we'll be back with Chase Skotsky with part two. And she has four reasons why she left MUFON, among other things. Naming names, as they say. That's coming up on part two. You know, when we pause for a commercial, it's always for somebody who pays the freight, pays the way. Well, I'm going to take time out to talk about somebody who can't pay their way. And that's the stray animals, dogs and cats and other animals, who need your help. And there is a way to help them. Support no-kill animal shelters. It's a gift of life that keeps on giving. These animal shelters are located around the world and maybe in your neighborhood. Animals, they need love. They don't need to be sent someplace and then executed just because they don't have a home. Support the animal shelter that is a no-kill shelter near you. Give them a donation of $10, $25, $50 or more. The money will be well used. The animals will love you for it. So give a gift of love. A gift of life to that stray dog or cat. Welcome to part two of MUFON Under Siege, our special series. This interview with Chase Skotsky, who was the star team person to go to originally. And the last time I talked to her, she was really, really excited. But since then, she became disenchanted and joined another organization. We have Chase on the line with us from Memphis, Tennessee at our home. And Chase, we'll get to the drama queen again in a moment, but you said you wanted to do it your way. You have four reasons that you want to lay out why you're no longer with MUFON.
I'm so sorry. I don't want to control this interview, but, you know, it really was... so much drama. This was at the time of all the firings. The DOI was on a roll. She was cleaning house. Just happened to be all very, you know, prominent women, very strong women that were, you know, working very hard and had voices and asked questions, but that's okay. But the drama, it was just old. There was always such an emphasis on what do we do about what that person said? You know, what do we do about what that person's doing? I remember the horror and the angst that James Carrion was going to make a public stand on a radio show. Ken Cherry's going to write a tell-all book with Jim Mars. Oh, my gosh, Elaine Douglas is forming a group against MUFON, you know. After a while, it's just, who cares? Who cares? We keep our head down. We keep working. We keep finding these great cases that were trusted to us, and we win in the big picture. That was always my contribution back. That was always my advice. Who cares? Let's just do our job. Don't worry what everybody else is doing or saying. Who cares if they're starting their own group? We have over 500 cases reported to us a month. That is not an exaggeration. That's true numbers from them. We have 40 years of data and experience. We're a scientific organization, right? Aren't we? Then I'd listen to the strategy and I'd stand still and just cringe sometimes. It was just obnoxious. But I stand on the principle, Jerry, that if we just focus on what we were supposed to be doing, we'd win in the end. Why call people out? Why discredit honest people just because you didn't like something they said or they don't like us today? Who cares? Grow up. That was seriously my job, or my attitude, you know. Then I get this email, and in the bottom of the email, there was this little supplement, and I promise I'm getting to the big why Chase left. There's just this little statement at the bottom saying that there's going to be a procedure supplement for the STAR Team manual. Okay, well, who wrote that, and could I see it first, and what's it about? Well, apparently it was about an NBC policy, which is nuclear, biological, or chemical. And NBC just kind of being military or homeland security for, you know, any kind of hazardous material. I was a little stunned when I saw it, Jerry, because the STAR Team manual clearly already addressed this, which was, if you suspect or have any reading or verification that there is any kind of nuclear, biological, or chemical influence or contamination, our investigators are to immediately step out of that zone, get to a safe spot, and call me. At that point, as STAR Team manager, I would contact the appropriate people for further instruction. And the instruction was going to be difficult because in today's environment of homeland security, what are you going to do? So I kind of relayed that and put it out there and, you know, just kind of thought, okay, that makes sense, right? I guess it didn't, because there was also told me that they were also going to do this demonstration on how to properly put on a hazmat suit at the next symposium. Well, I'm a little peeved at this point. One, because nobody's talked to me about these new policies for the STAR Team, and I'm the STAR Team manager and responsible for that. So I responded to this email with such questions as, and I am quoting here, do we have proper updated hazmat suits, you know, that have been inspected and not the ones that have been in Cliff's garage for 3 years? If we train our investigators to properly suit up, how would you like them to take them off, especially if they are contaminated? Will there be a full decontamination process at the scene? How would you like them to dispose of those hazmat suits? Maybe a dumpster on the way home? Would you like them to do with the evidence? Put it in their trunk, the nearest mailbox? Maybe even, you know, you're getting my point here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have the federal, state, and local laws in consideration when asking our volunteers to enter a scene like this? Do we have bail money if they're caught? Because it won't be a little trip to a local police station. It's straight to Homeland Security. Are we prepared, quite frankly, and insured for any possible harm to any investigator that is guided and believes that they are properly trained to effectively enter a contaminated area? Those were just off the top of my head. I think they were serious considerations that we should at least talk about before you start demonstrating to a group of people, hey, this is what you do if things get tough or you suspect radiation. I think it's more serious than that. And I never, ever planned on ever putting a volunteer, somebody's mom, dad, brother, daughter, son, in harm's way. That's not our intent, no matter how bad we want that evidence. Because what are we going to do with it anyway? Does that make sense?
Yes, most certainly that makes sense. And do you know if MUFON's ever had a case where there's hazardous material laying around?
I have heard of MUFON cases where they were suspected, and we do get readings of, you know, certain scientific readings that would definitely make us back off. I've never heard of a real contamination site, but we need to prepare for
it. I mean, would it even be legal for a volunteer from MUFON to be around a site like that?
Well, I think our thing was if they were there first. Our team was a rapid response. So if they were like the first responder, they were the first ones there, we would want them to know, don't go in there. There's way too many things that you may not think of because, like me, you know, just say you walk into a Roswell situation, you've got a down craft, you've got some aliens laying out there, who wouldn't run to that alien, you know? So, I think there's, you know, considerations when you're trying to put together a big program that you try to cross your T's and dot your I's. Our policy at the STAR team was there to remove themselves. Just the Homeland Security Protocol, just the fact of what are you going to do if you get the evidence and it's contaminated. Any MVC site, we're going to pull you back. We can do so much more, you know, taking pictures, getting samples, you know, documenting the cards, the cover-up, you know. So there were many other things that we could do. An email was eventually released from Cliff and Malzahn agreeing that the STAR team protocol and any further instruction, I'm sorry, that the STAR team protocol was good. Any other instruction would definitely be harmful. I also addressed in that email that, you know, if we were going to have a discussion and supplements to the STAR team manual, we had some talent on the STAR team that I would like to include in these discussions, considering that they're professional and they're current and they work in these industries as we speak. And that was my second, how dare you, Chase. Because you see, at the time, the DOI had a policy that only those that filled out an application were considered STAR team members. This had to do with the confidentiality agreement. Nobody that did not have that application sitting at headquarters and on our roster was to be considered STAR team. No one. So you can imagine that Chase just stepped in a hornet's nest. At first I thought I just pissed off the good old boys, but I realized and was told specifically that there were 7 STAR team investigators that have been doing this long before Bigelow came along, long before Chase was around, and I can just need to know my place. And this email with me including these other people was to just bring in some new talent, you know, get my STAR team in there. Well, the people that I was going against that originated this STAR team supplement were very angry at me at this point because I just questioned them with some hard questions about MVC policy, and I also said I would like these people involved. It really was, who do you think you are? That's exactly what I got back.
Well, now, Chase, who was telling you this? I mean, was it Clifford or was it the drama queen?
This one, they were pretty much non-existent at that point. They were not getting involved in this one. They would not get involved. At this point, I had a phone call from a deputy director. And I promise you, there are witnesses that were at my house when this phone call came in. They heard every word out of this man's mouth. He was angry. He was shaking as he was telling me, do you know who I am? I have shaken hands of every president except President Clinton, and I didn't shake his hand because I chose not to. You have no idea who you're talking to. And what I said was, Well, no, because you can't have any information on this. Why would you write something? You're not even on a star team. Why wouldn't this? Oh, my gosh. There we go. I don't have to fill out an application. I am part of the 7 original star team members. I am the person that personally introduced MUFON to Robert Bigelow. You don't know who you're dealing with, Chase, and know your place.
Are you talking about John Schuessler? He's the one that was on the Bigelow board and the MUFON board. He's the one who got Bigelow involved.
It actually, nope, it wasn't him.
Well, had you heard of this guy before?
Yeah, I knew. I knew of him. I had never heard one word from him. He never had any input in the program. He knew I was designing it. I've never heard one word.
Chase, don't keep me in suspense. Are you going to tell me who it is? I need to know who this guy is.
I'll tell you who it is because, you know, these aren't my secrets to keep. I'll be honest with you. That's why I've decided to finally, you know, tell people why I left because they're not mine. The weight of the situation is old. You know, I'm still getting emails and messages from people who want to know what happened. And most are sincerely looking for an answer or a piece of the information that validates something they already suspect. Some are just curious. But I feel there's no reason whatsoever to stay silent anymore because it obviously hasn't helped anyone. And truthfully, they're not my secrets to keep. They're heavy, they're on my shoulders, and I'm washing my hands of the whole experience completely. That's my motive.
Who was this guy?
The reason I didn't come out right away is because, and it's hard to admit this because I tend to be a strong woman. I was devastated. I was devastated leaving. I didn't want to not be the star team manager. I didn't want to quit. I had to. I was forced in a corner where I was going to have to lie to the very people I promised I wouldn't. I was asked for information that I was not going to give people who did not need it, knowing what I knew about these specific people. When we had a case, well, the Florida case was great. We were getting better at catching these cases and securing the information to the witnesses. And we happened to catch this reported landing in Washington, the state of Washington. Now, this is after my phone call of do you know who I am, my 30-minute reprimand. The chest beating that this man did, demanding that I know how important he was and everything he's done in his life. Of course, what I wanted to ask him was, okay, so that's great. That's awesome. It's so admirable. But what have you contributed to humanity? I mean, what have you done to this field? Where are your studies? Where are your investigations? How are you helping out? I haven't heard from you since I became star team manager. This is the first time you're calling me to tell me that there's 7 of you that do anything you want. There's absolutely no oversight. And is this where our cases are disappearing? Is this where some of these are going? Because I still get state directors calling me, begging me, Chase, what is going on with our cases disappearing? Is this where they're going? Are you guys still active?
What did they say?
These 7 original star team, you know, are they still? Well, apparently they are, but we're not going to know anything about them. I was never told, and I even asked Marie, the DOI, and she absolutely, and I did believe her this time, she said she didn't know anybody. She said, Chase, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard of that before. The director of investigation, Marie Malzahn, at least what she told me, was she knew nothing about it. Do you know I never heard another word about these 7 again? My questions went unanswered. Nobody would talk about it. And we had that landing, a reported landing, I want to say alleged, but it went to the state of Washington.
When did that landing in Washington happen with the UFO and the ET?
This was probably Thursday or Friday, so it had to have been like February 10th or 11th. That it was reported.
You're talking this year?
Yes. And we were on.
And this guy who called you and said he didn't like Clinton, he knew about it?
Yeah, well, we found it, yes. So the assistant star team manager the regional star team manager and myself secured the witness's information. We did not steal it off the CMS. It was absolutely all done above board, but we protected this witness's name, address, and phone number. Oh my gosh, my phone went off the ringer demanding the information from that case right now. They didn't ask for a name, Jerry, they didn't ask for the phone number, they didn't ask if our investigators needed any equipment, needed any help. He wanted those GPS coordinates, and he wanted them right now.
Who were these people?
This was Chuck Modlin, the same one who called me with, "Do you know who I am?"
Give me his name again. I've never heard of him.
You've never heard of Chuck Modlin?
No.
So, well, that's he's a deputy director, and that's exactly who called me with this.
I mean,
two witnesses at my house heard every word.
Wait a minute, Chase. Jane Swartley, our producer. Jane, can you find out about Chuck Modlin? I never heard of the guy. Okay, Chase, we're going to check. He says he knows all these presidents, huh?
He's been around. He's been a MUFON for quite some time.
We're checking right now, Chase. I don't think he's been at MUFON that long. Less than 5 years, I bet. We're going to find out.
I'm kind of the new girl with this. This is a man who, if he is that severe in MUFON and that prominent, you'd think I would have heard from him before then. It was only when we started getting good enough, Jerry, that we were hitting these cases, and we were getting there first, and we were getting our evidence, and started getting a lot of attention. And when we secured this information, he was livid. I would not give him that information because he was not in the proper chain of command. I had not been authorized to do so, and I wasn't going to be the person who compromised our own case. I knew exactly what this was. He didn't ask for anything except those GPS
coordinates. Okay, we found two things out about Chuck Modlin already. He's listed as Director of Investigations at MUFON, and he's been a member only about 3.5 years. At least that's the information I have from a state director who knows him. We're getting more information on Chuck Modlin, and we'll give that in a moment, but let's move on from Mr. Personality there to this Washington case, an encounter with a UFO. Do you know anything else about it?
No. It actually turned out not to be anything, is what I was told. And at this point, whatever. I knew we were done. We were not supposed to be successful. I don't know what these seven were doing.
I've been told that that report of that encounter is on the MUFON site, and it finally was decided that it was a helicopter. So if Mr. Chuck did that, and I have a note here that former international director thinks that Chuck Modlin might be an insider with the U.S. government. Let's talk about we'll talk about Chuck. Let me ask you right now. He said that he was a member of the original seven-man star team well before Bigelow. Well, unless our information is wrong, he's lying. He hasn't been with MUFON except for about 3.5 years, maybe 4 years at the most, and the Bigelow thing came right about that time. I wonder why he'd say that. I wonder who the other seven are, or the other six.
What he told me is they were the original seven star team members that were around way before Bigelow, way before SIP, way before Chase Pledge.
And no one at MUFON would or could tell you about this original seven?
Malzahn said she knew nothing about, she had never heard of that before, and I never heard another word. Any questions? At this point, I couldn't get anybody to respond to an email. Cliff wouldn't answer back. I was completely cut off. Nobody was talking to me anymore because I wanted to know who these seven were, and if you weren't going to tell me, because I wanted to know who these seven were, and if you weren't going to tell me...
Do you have any idea who the other seven might be, or the other six?
I'm suspicious, but I don't. The only reason I even speak.
More news coming in on Chuck Modlin. His wife evidently is an attorney, and she recently became state director in Wisconsin. And I guess that's where he lives. I wonder what he's doing with that information.
And I asked them, I said, well, what do you do with this information? What are you going to do? Are you in the state of Washington? Can you help? I mean, what are you doing with this information? It gets a little worse. There was no answer. I was demanded to give him that information. I did not do it. Malzahn calls me, demands that from now on, every single Star Team case, the first person I call is Chuck Modlin. I am to give him full disclosure on every single piece of...
So, is this guy running the Star Team? I mean...
He wasn't running it from...
Well, I mean, if he has to know first, it sounds like he's running it.
This was something that was all new to me. You know, never heard of these people before, never heard of this. And, you know, so I'm kind of sitting back, and my answer is no, I am not going to do that. Because what are they doing with the information? What are they... If they're selling it to Bigelow, which I don't know this. This is my thought process. If they're selling it to Bigelow... They're selling it to, you know, another aerospace company. I don't want to keep picking on Bigelow, but are they giving it to the government? Are they discrediting? Are they disrupting us as a government, you know, plant? It doesn't matter. Whatever they're doing with it, the public doesn't know. Our members aren't aware. Our state directors aren't told. And it's secrecy. And it doesn't belong in our organization. And I'm not going to have any part of it. And when I tried to get a hold of Cliff, he did not return my calls in 5 days. I did not get a returned email. Chuck Reaver did not return anything. Marie Malzahn wouldn't even pick up her phone. It was insane. And all I wanted was, what are these guys? Are they really? I answer to them now. What is going on, and where is this information going? The way the Star Team, when you have a report of anything, that state director is your lifeline. They know their state. They know their best talent. They know the easiest way to get there. They know the back roads. Why would I cut them out? And you have to remember, Jerry, I made a promise when I first became Star Team manager to every one of these people, because of their bad experiences from the last one, that I was not going to be that leader. I was not going to do that to him.
Now, I asked Clifford Cliff when you left why you left, and he said he had no idea. He seemed as shocked as I was.
There's probably some truth in that. He never returned my calls or nothing, and... Mm-hmm. Granted, he was busy. That was during the time when, you know, Leslie and, I guess, Elaine had just gotten their letters. And I'm only saying their names because they've all come out very publicly. So, you know, I'm not trying to bag anybody or hurt anybody. But, you know, Cliff does have a full plate. But we were always told to be very careful calling Cliff because he's overwhelmed. He's stressed out. He's not doing well. His health, we're worried about him. I was told not to call Chuck Reaver.
Who told you that?
Marie Malzahn. Okay. Everything goes through this woman. Everything in MUFON now goes through Marie Malzahn. Everything. There's not a single decision, anything that does not go through this woman.
Well, she's not been with MUFON very long, has she?
You see, and I wasn't in headquarters long enough to get all these... What I will tell you is, you know, we were told that, I guess, poor Cliff puts out an email talking about her outstanding credentials, and that's why she's invited to the board of directors, talking about her record as a state director. Well, the emails went flying after that, well, it's easy to be a good state director when you've never had a meeting. You never started a chapter. You had one investigator. I mean, she was in Idaho. She was the only one, you know. It's, you know, so, you know, all those jokes went through. Marie did tell me one time she did work a Star Team case. She got $600 and never left her house. Okay. Yay. Good for you. You know.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest, and most people know this. I had no respect for her after about 60 days of working for her. Her tactics were amateur. I think she had a motive. I don't know what it was, but I was scared for MUFON. And I did not like the way the back talk, you know, the inner circle, as she calls them. Everyone else in MUFON calls them her minions. But her inner circle, you know, I was part of that. You know, I know what the back chatter is. I know what the, you know, Friday night calls at 10 o'clock because, you know, this is the latest drama. I was there. I know how they handle it, and it disgusted me. I'm going to be honest with you. Going after people who ask questions, publicly reprimanding MUFON members. Let's not forget, most volunteers do something. They give up their time. They take it away from their families. Let's not forget, I pay for that membership. For me to keep my position, I owe you money every year. I buy that, don't I? Chance to give you 60 and 80 hours a week. You know, to be slapped in the face. I don't know who this guy was. I don't even know if what he was telling me was the truth. This is a phone call I got, and Marie backed him 150%. This was not what I was told when Chuck Reaver and I discussed the new Star Team. It was going to be upfront. There were going to be no secret agendas, no secret squirrel societies. I would have nothing to do with any of that. And because I made these promises, Jerry, what I was asked to do, and in the big picture of everything I knew, I was going to have to lie to people. I was going to have to keep quiet about certain things, and I didn't sign up for that. One of the people I talked to that wanted nothing to do with this Star Team was Elaine Douglas. And I remember speaking with her on the phone and promising her, Elaine, I'll quit first. I will never, ever violate a state's, the territory. Why would I do that? I need the state director. You know, I will never secretly do investigations against the membership.
I talked to Elaine today, and, you know, her committee to reform MUFON, I don't think it's unreasonable, the membership being able to vote on the board of directors. What's wrong with that?
Of course, I think it's reasonable, too, but, you know, I wouldn't sign it because MUFON's not going to change. You know, there is, in my opinion, and take it or leave it, you know, trust me or don't, it seriously, there's an agenda there. And I don't know if it goes to the board. What I can tell you is this man called me and told me everything I needed to know. And he did it as beating his chest, you know, like, do you know? And that's exactly what he said. Do you know who I am? He was shaking. My husband was so offended by this phone call. Where he was one of the two witnesses to this phone call, by the way. He was so offended, half of him was laughing at him, and the other half was ready to, you know, grab that phone and tell this man who he was talking to.
Okay, we have more on Chuck Modlin. He is a veteran of the U.S. Navy, has something in common with your husband, Chase. And secondly, let's see, I guess he worked at Livermore Laboratories. That's probably where that hazard suit thing came. I think he did do a, I have a note here from Jane. He did a hazard suit display or demonstration, I think, in 2008 at the symposium that MUFON holds.
Don't come up with the NBC policy until you answer these questions or at least include me. You know, obviously, what I was saying was reasonable because it didn't happen. But from that moment on, I had nothing but trouble, including I cannot even secure my own cases. Now, right after I left, I was forwarded many emails from many people. Everybody wanted to keep me in the loop with MUFON. And what they didn't realize is I don't want to be. You know, I wasn't sitting here licking wounds. I was devastated and heartbroken because I love MUFON. I love that
job. Well, Chase, it's pretty sad. great organization like MUFON, and they let it get screwed up because of personalities and not taking care of business. All they had to do was communicate with you, in my opinion.
The MUFON that I thought I joined.
I mean, yeah. Clifford could have returned your emails and telephone calls. The Lady Marine could back off.
Honestly, Jerry, if I had those answers, I'd feel more satisfied. You know, Cliff is absolutely right. I don't know. I assumed. I was told. Malzahn told him everything. I was stunned when I found out he was upset I left. I thought they were waiting for this. From the phone call I got and the harassment and the orders I got from Marie, she knew I was leaving. Obviously he knew. I don't think he did. And it shocked me. And I apologized to him for that after. I said, me not talking to you after I left, Cliff, was not disrespectful. I had made my decision. I'm not coming back. What is going on in MUFON? I don't know where he fits in this. But you know what? You don't lose a star team manager and half of your state officers within 90 days and not ask questions from the person who's responsible for all of it, the DOI. So I do hold him responsible. If you weren't being told, Cliff, why aren't you asking?
Chase, I appreciate you coming on and being very candid with your remarks about MUFON. And to sum it up, I guess we can say you just did not care for their management style and some of the managers.
They're absolutely right, because I've already seen Malzahn's tactics with people. I've already seen, what she does. So in my resignation letter, I very politely said I resigned my position. This is the date. This is how I'm going to send the equipment back. I didn't give it, because if I gave them an explanation, I know how they'd spin it and start the discrediting. I had a lot of friends still in MUFON. I adore these people in MUFON. I hope I keep them after coming out. I think a lot of people appreciated me not saying anything, and a lot of people wanted me to come out swinging. So,
well, you came out swinging. You got any final swinging comments?
And so-called ufologists are the cruelest, nastiest, craziest people I've ever encountered. Close quote. We shouldn't be that way. The stakes are too high, Jerry. The stakes are too high, and there's way too much to do and not a lot of time to do it in. That's just my personal opinion. You got me going there, Jerry. I'm just like,
Well, Chase, I think we're going to leave it at that.